and child protection have agreed to collaborate in promoting women's empowerment across various sectors and enhancing child protection. Aiming for inclusive and sustainable development. During a meeting in Jakarta, PIM Chairperson Lana T. Kontoro expressed hopes for a strategic partnership with MMPPA, leveraging PIM's regional networks to effectively implement programs nationwide. Bank Indonesia recorded a net foreign capital outflow of 11.96 trillion rupiah from domestic financial market during the period of April 14th until 16th, 2025. This figure compromises net outflows of 13.01 trillion rupiah from the stock market and 2.24 trillion rupiah from Bank Indonesia rupiah securities, partially offset by a net inflow of 3.28 trillion rupiah into government securities. As of April 16th, 2025, cumulative net foreign capital outflows for the year amounted to 36.86 trillion rupiah from the stock market and 7.94 trillion rupiah from SRBI, while SBN saw a net inflow of 9.63 trillion rupiah. And that was the news.
Fishes now.
year, the ASEAN-Africa Conference, which was first held on April 18, 1955 in Bandung, West Java, is now entering the 70th year in 2025. This historic momentum is an important milestone for Asian and African countries fighting for independence and ending colonialism. From this conference was born the Bandung 10 Principles, 10 basic principles that serve as guidelines for cooperation and solidarity among developing countries. And on this hustle and bustle of political turmoil, Indonesia did not forget to remind the member of the states of ASEAN-African Conference that united 29 countries in 1955 and together built the countries into a better place to live in. But how is the implementation of the treaty and does the member states, countries still remember about it? Let us find out today in VOA Talk with me, Ray, and join us through Bapak Wicaksono Aji as the Director of Asia-Pacific and African Intra-Regional and Inter-Regional Cooperation. How are you today, Pak?
I'm very good. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me in your program.
Yes, we are glad as well. And so, without any further ado, I would like to ask some questions. The first one is, Indonesia planning to host the Asia-Africa Summit this year to commemorate the 17th anniversary? And if so, what is the significance of this event in today's global context?
Well, Ray, indeed Indonesia is planning to commemorate the 70th anniversary of the 1955 Asian-African Conference this year. But the format might not be a full-blown summit as we've witnessed in previous years, like in 2005 or 2015. The significance of such commemoration lies in reaffirming the relevance of the Bandung spirit, you know, solidarity, peace, and cooperation, at a time when the world is facing heightened geopolitical tension, economic fragmentation, and also, you know, climate change. This commemoration serves as a timely platform to re-energize the voice and role of Asian and African countries in promoting a more just and also a more inclusive global order.
Okay, so what kinds of programs or commemoratives are planned to mark the historic milestone for this year?
Well, we are currently in coordinations with the relevant government institutions for this commemorative event. However, Ray, as it is not yet final, I'm afraid I am not at liberty to provide any details right now.
Okay. So, for the last year, Indonesia hosted 100 students from 36 countries in an international youth gathering. Even though there's an event that will be held this year, and is there any youth engagement that will happen in today, in this year's event?
Well, first I'd like to just clarify the event that you've mentioned, you know, about those 100 students from 36 countries. If you are talking about the international students gathering, which was held last year, I should clarify that that event was actually hosted by a private university in Bandung, but in cooperation with an arm of the foreign ministry, which is the Asian African Conference Museum in Bandung. We note also that such similar events were held in previous years as well. You know, we've noted, I think it's one in 2018 and 2019. Ray, I should say that the role of that museum, the Museum of Asia-Africa Conference, in preserving and promoting the values of that conference, are conducted through various programs and events in collaborations with various partners and various parties, including through events such as the International Student Gathering of last year.
Okay, so about the international students, talking about the international world or the global world, how is Indonesia maintaining or strengthening business cooperation with Asia-Pacific countries amidst ongoing global economic challenges right now?
Well, if you're talking about Indonesia continues to deepen its economic partnership with Asia-Pacific countries through a mix of bilateral ties, regional frameworks, and also through multilateral forums. So in the face of global uncertainties, Indonesia wishes to focus on building a resilient and inclusive and a sustainable economic architecture.
Okay.
For instance, with Japan, Indonesia is advancing collaboration in infrastructure and also in energy transition, including, you know, you must have heard the development of the Patumban Quartz, and also in cooperation in hydrogen and low-carbon technologies. With China, cooperation remains strong, especially in digital economy, the green industry, and also strategic infrastructure such as the Jakarta-Bandung high-speed railway, the WOSH. South Korea is a key partner in the development of EVs, electric vehicles. The EV ecosystem, you know, major investments from South Korea such as Hyundai and LG Energy Solution, for instance, is heavily invested in the battery manufacturing. In the Pacific, Indonesia is expanding cooperation through the what is called the Indonesia Pacific Forum for Development, focusing on climate resilience, digital access, MSMEs development, and so forth. Plus, at the regional level, Indonesia actively leverages its role in major trade platforms. Yeah, we commit to maximum RCEP and also ASEAN economic integration, while also pursuing the accession to the CPTPP, the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement on for Trans-Pacific Partnership. All of this is to widen our trade access. So I should say that through all these engagements, Indonesia aims to create complementarities. So we do not only put everything in one basket. We need to disperse our engagements through various regions. We would like to link our industrial strengths, our demographic advantage, we have a lot of young people, and also our natural resources, our abundant natural resources, with technology, capital, and market access offered by our partners in the Asia and Pacific.
Okay, so that is really interesting. And does it count as the Bandung principles being applied to address the modern challenges? Because Bandung is well known for its strong fighting spirits, and such as facing this climate change and digital transformation, and also the global inequality.
Well, the Bandung spirit advocates for an inclusive approach to addressing global challenges.
Okay.
One that values the perspectives of both the global north, you know, the developed countries, and the global south, the developing countries. It also guides our collective response by emphasizing cooperation over competition and mutual respect over unilateralism. Challenges such as conflicts, climate change, digital inequality must be addressed collectively through multilateralism, not unilateral actions, right?
Sure.
The voices of diverse stakeholders, like for instance journalists such as yourself, academicians, academics, the youth, civil society must also be part of the conversation. On climate change, we are promoting climate justice. On digital transformation, we support bridging the digital divide through knowledge sharing. And on inequality, we focus on inclusive growth strategies that will leave no one and no country behind. In the digital era, we are witnessing a growing divide between those with access to digital technologies and those without. This divide, the so-called digital divide, risks reinforcing existing inequalities between nations and within societies. So Bandung Spirit, the spirit, you know, advocates for a just and inclusive digital transformation, where technological progress is not concentrated in the hands of just a few, but should be shared equitably across the globe, including in the global south.
Okay.
So I think I've addressed those questions that you raised.
Okay. So, Mr. Anji, I'd like to ask, since in this promoting in this digital era, using promotion with so many varieties and wide expresses can be expressed through social media, how is the Indonesia continuing to uphold the values of justice and promoting unity and shared interest while working with the Asian and African nation?
Indonesia remains committed to inclusive multilateralism.
Mm-hmm.
We work with our partners both in Asia and Africa, and in fact, throughout the world, to strengthen regional institutions to support the voice of the global south. Yeah, we are part of that big voice of the global south in global discussions, and to promote development cooperation based on mutual benefit and respect. Indonesia also champions initiatives in peace building, in food security, and also digital inclusivity.
Mm. Okay, so in what ways does the and what role can the youth and the civil society play in keeping the Asia-Africa partnership relevant and active in the future?
What? Did you repeat your question again?
Okay. Sorry. What then role can the youth and civil society play in keeping the Asia-Africa partnership relevant and active in the future?
All right. Okay. So you're talking about the youth,
yes,
specifically, and the civil society.
Yes.
Well, those two groups of the society, the youth and civil society, I see them as a catalyst for innovation, also for accountability, and grassroots connectivity. Their active participation, the youth and civil society, will ensure that the cooperation, the Asia-Africa cooperation, is not confined to just governments like myself, government-level initiatives, but also it becomes a dynamic and people-centered movement.
Hmm.
So empowering the youth, civil society, women, included as well, is essential for the long-term relevance and resilience of this partnership, Asia-Africa cooperation.
Okay, so for the final question, I would like to ask, what are your hopes for the future of cooperation between Asia, Africa, and African nations in the next decade to come?
Well, I envision a future where Asia, Pacific, and Africa nations stand as equal partners in shaping a sustainable, a fair, and a peaceful world. This includes, deeper economic integration, joint innovative efforts, also cultural exchanges, and a stronger collective voice in global governance. As you know, global governance, as we know it today, is more the legacy of the powerful nations, but we seek a stronger collective voice in that global governance, which includes those from the global south. So I just would like to stress as a final statement that the Bandung legacy is not just a memory. It is a mission we continue to carry forward.
Okay, that was so amazing. And thank you so much, Mr. Wijaksono Aji, the Directorate of Asia-Pacific and African Interregional and Interregional Cooperation. And well, listener, as we wrap up Voice Talk today, we've just heard interesting topics. And in the middle of the political and dynamic of economic turmoil, people still have to hope to maintain the peace and stability in the future through the social bond that is still held by the Asia-Africa member countries. And thank you so much, well, listener, for tuning in this special interview and VOI Talk. I'm Ray, and thank you for watching, and I'll see you in the next episode. for banana leaves and pipe. The solid is called agate. To make the salami, initially agate is kneaded by hand until it looks like flour. Then the ingredients are put into a very unique steaming cone. The dough is made from woolen coconut leaves. To steam the agate, they use a pot made of clay similar to a jar. The cone filled with agate flour is put into the mouth of the pot. Then it is cooked with medium heat and medium volume of water in a pot for about 15 minutes. One kasami is generally made with a diameter of 10 cm and a height of 10 cm and weighs approximately 500 to 700 grams. Usually, a person can spend 1 to 2 kasamis. Kasami is sometimes served as a substitute for rice because it is often served along with vegetables and side dishes of various processed fish, such as grilled fish, fried fish, and salted fish. Kasami is the initial food in Bhutan's traditional events. In that way, kasami is also often used as stocks for treats or souvenirs between fellow Bhutan residents. Kasami can be eaten without side dishes, accompanied by a cup of hot tea in the afternoon. The distinctive taste of cassava and the sweet blend of tea will add to this culinary delight. Kasami is also often
sugar.
You can add shaved ice or ice cubes that are broken into small pieces. As a variation, you can also add pieces of chefruit or prunes sticky rice puppy. For one bowl of rice compote,
that you only need to pay 5,000 rupees. It's quite affordable, isn't it?
Shallots, chilies, tomato, and sea lime.